As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Do you have now a special title? You're one of these guardians, aren't you? Do I have to call you Guardian of the Trust, Sir George of Colgan?
Lord Colkin, I think, the Guardian. Guardian Colkin. I don't know, I'll have to think about that.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle-inated podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne and coming up on this week's show, we're joined by Newcastle legend Warren Barton will be with us for a fantastic chat. We're going to be talking about his involvement with the 1892 Pledge and the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. We'll be discussing his emotional link to the club and also have a look back at his time in black and white. But before we get into all of that, let's tell you about the latest offer from The Athletic. You can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for a special price of $3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So get yourself to theathletic.com/Newcastle pod to take advantage of the special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/Newcastle pod.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this. Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F. Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
So, it's an absolute pleasure to say we are joined by none other than Warren Barton. Warren, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much. It's been a bit of an eventful 7-8 days, to say the least. You know, obviously the momentum that we've gained with the pledge and then cheering for Wolves, getting a result, and then obviously seeing the boys get a big, big 3 points. So it's fantastic. Amazing how a good 3 points can make you have a good week. So, yeah, it's been a fantastic week.
It certainly does. So give us a little bit of info about where you are at the moment. What's your current activity? What is Warren Barton up to with him?
You really want me to tell you? Mate, you're jealous.
Definitely. Tell me. Come on.
I was lucky enough in 08, I had the opportunity to come over to America. Coming here for many, many years on vacation. And I'm lucky enough, I settled in a place called San Diego, which is about 100 miles south of Los Angeles. Arguably, apart from Newcastle, probably the best place in the world to live. 364 days of the year, it's 60 degrees or 70 degrees.
Oh, you're
rubbing
it in now.
Yeah, I know. So I'm doing some coaching. I'm coaching my kids, which I love doing at an academy level. Working for Fox Sports, whether it's been World Cups, Champions League, Premier League, but now MLS. So, yeah, I'm very, very lucky. I've made a big step, as I said, many years ago, but it's paid off. It's amazing what a bit of sunshine can do to you.
Absolutely. Well, it was snowing here yesterday, so, you know, you're lucky not to be in the northeast at the minute.
Yeah, you can go off. You can go off, people, Warren. You do know that.
Yeah, hey, I know. Joe. I didn't really want to say too much. I didn't want to say the beach is only 100 yards away either, but I thought I'd leave that out.
Well, I was going to say, before you spoilt everything, I was going to say it's such kind of nice story, but try and explain how a Londoner who now lives in the United States has such an association with Newcastle and has such an association with Newcastle that you've been asked to be part of the pledge scheme. I mean, we want to talk about what that means, but just try and explain a bit in your own words your association that you have with the club.
Well, obviously, with the signing of joining Kevin Keegan and the entertainers, myself and Les Ferdinand, David Ginola and Shagger Hislop, was a big move by the club at the time to spend that type of money. And then to follow it up, obviously, with Alan Shearer the following year was a great honour. I was lucky enough at the time at my old team, Wimbledon, that there was a lot of speculation, whether it was Arsenal, Sheffield Wednesday, Everton, Man City, Celtic, and even in Italy, Roma. So there was a bit of speculation about that. But once I'd been in the North East and played against Newcastle and been around Peter Beardsley with England, Rob Lee, Steve Howie, John Beresford, and obviously Barry Venison. I never want to forget Barry, because Barry was great, because in theory I was actually coming to take his place. And he was great, the way he was professional. And anyone that knows Barry, he wants the best for the club, best for the North East. And that gave me a sense of what it's like to be involved in the North East. My mum's from the North. She's from Hull. But she moved back. She moved to London many, many years ago when she was a young girl. But we've got relations up there. So, you know, I understand the mentality of the Northern people as such, of working together, sticking together, being open. And that's really what I am as well. You know, I give everything I've got. I'm not a David Ginola. I'm not a Peter Beardsley. But I give everything I've got when I'm asked to do that. And meeting Kevin Keegan, as I did the first time in a hotel in London, made me realise pretty quickly it's a special place. It's a special area. It has a special mentality and something that I really thrived in. And not just talking about the football club. I'm talking about the people, the area, the region, and something that I thrived under. Now, whether that was Gary Speed, Rob Lee, Shay Given, Alan Shearer, all very good friends of mine, or even people like Derek Wright and Tomo the Kitman and Tony Doward as well, people in the club that I've got great affection with and great memories with, not just with the success that we had on the field, but that being open and honest and loyal and look at, and having each other's back, which I don't think you get. Well, I know you don't get that everywhere. And that's what's really ingrained in me as a boy when I was growing up, is to, you know, to be loyal, to work hard. And then I went into that environment and that area and that region, and that's really how it felt. Forget about the football side. The football was brilliant. I've never experienced anything like it here. 220 games, you know, playing in front of them fans. But I'm talking about how it was to live in that area and to be around and to walk into a supermarket. So hopefully that gives you an insight. It's not just about I'm great to wear the shirt. And that comes a given to me. I'm talking about what made a Londoner settle in the Northeast. And really, I didn't want to leave. It was Bobby saying, and Bobby being a great, great coach, realising it was the right time to get rid of an older man and bring through a younger player at the time and compete and challenge. And, you know, that's why, George, when I see what's happening and see the club and people up there, and whether it's people that I know, friends of mine, I still keep in contact with, because I loved it. I loved what it was all about. And that's really coming from inside, because that's what I was brought up to do, to give everything you got. And I did that. I gave it to the area. They gave it back. And as I said, it was a magnificent time.
You hear this from a few former players, and especially people from outside the area. They often talk about the connection that they feel once they leave, and it seems like it stayed with you right up until now. What was the thinking behind getting involved with the Trust? Is that something that you've known about for a long time, or is that something that's just been a recent thing for you?
No, I've known it's been, if you like, simmering along, whether that's the right word, but the right phrase, but I know it's been simmering in the background. And then probably in the last 3, 4, 5 months, it's got a lot more momentum. And that's when I was first contacted about it, hearing the people that were involved. And I go back to what, you know, Georgia said, is that the easy thing is to do nothing. The easy thing, and that's in my career. Even John, I could tell you a quick story that when times was bad and George was obviously reporting on the team at the time, John Beresford pulled me one time after training and said, you know, Warren, you know, the fans are getting on your back. They're having a go at you. Maybe you're a bit too honest, a bit too low. Just, you know, don't always try and get the ball. And I said, Bez, I can't do anything different. I ain't going to shy away from it. And my only way to go through it is to take a step forward. And that's what happened with this. We've sat back for so many months, so many years, and not done anything and whinged about it, moaned about it. The hardest thing actually to do is do something about it. And we did. And not just us. There's so many people that have done so much work way, way before I got involved. The phone calls, the Zoom calls, everything else that's been going on through a pandemic as well. And then being given the opportunity to come on board and just to be a guardian was a very, very easy, simple decision to make, and something that I'm proud to do. I'm honoured to do as well. And I wanted to do something. What is there to do? What can we do? Whether it's on social media, getting some momentum, whether it's doing an interview on BBC or Sky or a local Chronicle paper, whatever it is, what can we do to generate some sort of positivity through an awful, awful time, pandemic, and also the way that the team was going at that time? And maybe it's the kick up the backside that everybody needed. Maybe it's given someone a bit of a wake-up call to say, hold on a minute, look at what this club is. Look at what these clubs are. So maybe out of a dark, dark time, there's a positivity and a shining light, because you can see what it's done to all the fans, not just in the Northeast. I'm talking all over the world, that on social media, there was a group of people that just got together and gave 500, not only, but £500, rather than just doing little bits. They got together, and that's got fans together. That's got people together to have that feel-good factor.
So for people who were on holiday or on a different planet or whatever last week, can you please try and just explain what the pledge scheme is and what your role is as a guardian?
I'll start with the second question, Joe. The guardian is to make sure that the money that these people are pulling in, and whether it's a pound, a dollar, or £500 that we've seen, is going to be used in the right way, you know, and whether that's worst scenario, that the club goes down. And we've seen it happen to Leeds, Bury, Hearts in the Scottish League, and we've seen it not far down the road of what's happened to that lot. We would have wanted to be prepared that if anything happened, the fans, and it should have all happened a long time ago, the fans should have some sort of voice in the club. Because without that, you know, without that fan base, it's not a football club. You know, it's not that team. So that's the first and foremost. So people have been asked to be a guardian, and there's a group of us that have been able to do that. And that's to make sure that, you know, if the worst scenario is, we're in a position to have to save the club, to try and take the club forward. If that doesn't happen and someone on the white horse comes, charging in, we can use that money to go into local charities in the Northeast. So the pledge is really, and we'd love to have the opportunity of a monthly payment, of like you do with a direct debit, and just pay whatever you can afford. And we all know it's difficult, but you can be reassured by the people, the guardians, that are going to make sure that money will have an influence either in the football club or in the region, in the area. And by having that, you know, what it started already, nearly £50,000, all of a sudden that starts to be 100,000. Then it starts to get up to 500,000. Yeah. And, you know, we'd love to get to that total of 3 million to have 1% involvement. So basically it's the fans all over the world having a voice in Newcastle United Football Club. Now, if that doesn't happen, and we hopefully that whoever the new ownership would be smart enough to say, you know what, look what these fans have done off their own back, not anybody else. It's not been an incentive by the government or the football club or, you know, a wealthy consortium that's put together. We've done this as a group of people. When I say we, it happened a long time ago. they would want us having on the board. Now, that money will be there and then it'll be utilised in the right way, whether it's, as I said, to a charity or to put the football club in the right direction and to take the club where it should be, which is challenging for honours. Listen, when I was there, we come short. But at least we had a bloody good go about it.
Certainly did.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I was asked to be a guardian as well, and I'm very, very privileged, I suppose, to put it, to boil it down to its absolute bare minimum, is that we're there to make sure that the money is not misspent, that it's used for what it's intended to do. So along with Ian Mearns and Lee Humble, who's a who's an accountant. So that's what we're there for, and what a thrill it is. I mean, I guess the thing is that, you know, we've seen how much Newcastle means to fans, but we've also seen how much Newcastle have kind of ignored their fans over the last 10 years or more. And it's really about, as you say, it's about that simple act of doing something and trying to remind people that actually it's our football club, it's not their football club, it's our football club, and wanting to be part of whatever decisions are made in the future.
George, what really hit home to me is, again, on social media and in, you know, whether it's in the paper or however it's been, fans didn't want to go to the stadium. They didn't want to watch a game. For me, that's heartbreaking because I know Monday to Friday how hard people are working and they're rubbing their hands and they're right, let's go. It's Saturday morning. Let's go and meet somewhere, wherever we meet. Let's get the kids' shirt on. Let's get ready. Now, wife can quickly go and do her thing. Let's all meet together. We're going to walk up to the stadium and have that buzz around. And you can feel that in the area. You can feel it in the air. When we used to sit on the bus going to the game or walking into the stadium before with Kevin, with Rude, with whoever it was with Sir Bobby, you could feel it in the air, the anticipation, the excitement. And people are not getting that. And that's the least they deserve. That's the least that a fan deserves when they're going to a football game, is to have that buzz, to have that feeling. Okay, so it's 3 o'clock the game. Let's meet at 11 o'clock. That's how it used to be. That's how it should be. And when I heard that people was like, I'm not sure whether I really want to go with my dad. I've been a season ticket holder for 25 years. I don't know whether we're going to go. I mean, that to me is demoralising. If I was player and a manager,
I was one of those fans, Warren. That was me.
Yeah, and if I heard that, I would take that personal. I would think, what on earth am we doing? Because if we can't get the best fan, in my opinion, and it's again, it's only the best fans in the world, because they're there. When we went in the championship, there's still 45, 50. No other people are getting that. When we was doing well, there was 52. There was another 10,000, 15,000 people on the waiting list. There was 10,000 people at the club store at midnight trying to get a shirt. So, you know, that's what the potential of the club is. And, you know, it's heartbreaking that you feel like that, you know what, I'm not going to go with my son today to the game. I'm going to give it to someone else. I mean, that's, I would feel an obligation that I'm doing something wrong.
It was heartbreaking as a fan to go through that, to be honest, because I've got a boy who's 9-year-old and I want to take him to the game, and he's been with me a few times and he absolutely loves it. But there comes a point as a fan where you kind of say, you know, enough is enough with this. I'm putting in money here, which I'm seeing nothing back for from the club. I've never actually, I don't get the feeling from the club that they even care about fans anymore. So it, as a fan, it was a real wrench to do that, to walk away, to say, you know, I've had enough of this. And it's, I mean, this week, the feeling from the fans that since the pledge was launched, it's felt great seeing all of that support on social media and seeing everybody getting behind it. I think Newcastle fans just need to feel involved. They need to feel like they're doing something. And at the minute, we can't do anything. We can't be in the ground. We can't, you know, we can't cheer for our team. So seeing that wave of support on social media over the week was a great feeling. It really felt good.
George, I mean, hopefully you can do it, George, again, that quick story about the food bank, because that's hit home to me. There's certain things about the club and about the pledge and what it means to people with the food bank, because like I said, the anticipation of going to a stadium should be there all the time. But you had a great, you know, story about that.
Well, I think one of the reasons why the food bank is, I mean, you know, it's horrible that we have the food bank. It's horrible that it's necessary. But one of the reasons it's kind of resonated with people so much, I think, is that it's given people a meaning to their Saturday or to their match day. So people can go to the stadium, they can donate to the food bank, give money or bring food and feel something about their club, feel something, you know, that they're doing something kind of productive. That's certainly how I've felt about it. And, you know, it's horrible to have that thought that the bit where you walk into the stadium is going to be the least enjoyable, the most empty part of your Saturday, yeah. You know. And I think that's why something like this, something like the pledge, really does and well, has kind of caught the mood. And because, you know, what is a club? It's a collection of people. And that collection of people are the fans. We've seen that over the last year. You know, with nobody in the stadium, we see how withered football has become. And how empty it is. I mean, it's literally empty, but it's also sort of, you know, philosophically empty as well. And, you know, we need to get back. We need to kind of rediscover our own power, because there is power. It's just that it's been ignored. So, unfortunately, you know, it's at the point where we're having to do stuff for ourselves again. But I do think that's why there's been such a big response to the pledge scheme so far, and hopefully it continues, because people want to feel part of something again and they want to do something.
I bet a bottom dollar the first game when we have fans, there's going to be some roar, there's going to be some atmosphere, because this pledge scheme has got, like you've said, has got a lot of people infused again, you know, that enjoyment, that together again, regardless of who it is or whatever. I think they're going to be such an outpour of atmosphere going to that, say, in the first game, because everyone's been keyed up and they want to. We know how quick it could turn around. How quick, if you got some results, you got some momentum, how the atmosphere could change like that. Listen, I've got booed off after beating Watford 1-0 and Bradford 1-0. So we used to get booed off. I'm not saying it was always great, but we knew what we had to do. And that was when, you know, things was going well. But I just think, and I just, as I said, I bet my bottom dollar that if it really comes to the first game and that there's a sense of excitement, the atmosphere is going to be incredible, because I think there'd be a frenzy of excitement.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Why do you take it so personally? I mean, I've seen, you know, the stuff you say on Twitter, but, you know, this version of Newcastle, which is a long way removed from your version of Newcastle, why are you still bothered? Why do you take it so personally?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Without getting emotional with it, because it was a big part of my life, George. It was, you know, with my family being up there, and I worked so hard to play for a club, you know, as a young boy, and there's millions of kids want to do it. They want to play and you want to be involved, but it meant so much to play for the football club. I was honoured to be involved with the club. For someone like, you know, as you get older, you get a little bit more sentimental maybe. And that's why I'm getting a bit emotional. But to have someone like Bobby Robson make you a captain. Oh, I know Alan got injured and Alan's my captain and leader and a friend of mine. But I just know what the club is. And when I went there as a boy from Wimbledon to go and play, and the way I was involved in the club, the way I was treated was so special to me. And you know, whether it was the kids when we was out, whether we was going and just being looked after the way we did. And that's why I want to give everything back to the game. And that's why I was a PFA chairman as well. And that's why maybe I was on the committee. I want to give something back. And that club gave me so much, and the area and the people give me so much. And I just felt an obligation that I ain't going to just sit it. I made great friends, Rob Lee, Gary, you know, Gary Speed, what, you know, Shay Given, Alan, Norberto, all of them, you know, all the people that I was involved with, even the bad players, we had a good time, even the bad ones. But it just made such a great memory for me. And it was a special time in my life. it was a great time in my life. And listen, I'm having a great time there. Don't get the violins out. I don't want you to feel sorry for me. And I know you won't. But I just want people to remember what that club is and what the people are and what the city is. And as I said, it's hard just to let it go and just because it ain't a normal club. And it's not just normal fans. It's special. It's a special, special place. And that's why, as I said, I get emotional about it. I get angry about it. I have every emotion because it deserves better. The people deserve better of what's going on. And as I said, it could be quite easy just to go off and not worry about it. But I feel that they had my back. So I want to get their back. I want to look after them and give them some. It may fall on deaf ears. What I'm doing now may be a total waste of time, but at least I've had a go. At least I can put my head on the pillow at night and say, listen, I've done something. You know, I was so happy when Alan, after I think it was about 45 minutes, an hour when it launched, he come out straight away. And then you had Steve Howard, you had Rob Lee, you've had other people now coming on. And that them type of people tell me we're doing something right. So, yeah, you know, without getting the tissues out, but that's what it is.
Too late
for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Set us all off. I mean, you joined the club in 1995. You're the most expensive defender in the country at that time. I mean, you joined the club at that extraordinary moment at the start of the season, or that summer before what I will call the title season. Give us a flavour of the club then, and you know what it was like to be part of that extraordinary sort of sad but amazing and brilliant season all at the same time.
It was incredible in every sense. It was, I mean, the team beforehand with the likes of Scott Sellers and Andy Cole, the way that they was playing football at the time, have really lit up the Premier League. And as you know, at that time in 92, the Premier League had not just gone from, you know, predominantly men watching it. It was kids, it was women. It had gone global. It erupted into this spectacle of it is now, you know, the way it's looked at every corner of the world. And then to put on top of that, you know, I was a record for 4 million. For a defender, just broke into the England setup, et cetera, et cetera. Les Ferdinand 2 days later, which was wonderful. Me and Les used to be in England. Where are you going? And we sit at the table asking each other. And lo and behold, Les comes in for 6 million. You know, and I think everybody remembers that time when Kevin got on the steps and spoke about, look, we've let Andy Cole go. This is why we're doing it. And obviously Les come in as well. And then, you know, David Ginola, who was phenomenal. Shaka Hislop, as well as the other players that you had, and well as, you know, the players that you already had there, of Peter Beardsley, Rob Lee, Pavel Cernicek, you know, Darren Peake. Oh, the list goes on and on and on. And then to be involved in that type of football and the excitement of what had happened a couple of seasons before, they'd be building up, you know, whether it was sixth, second, and then doing well in the Premier League. And then we come along to try and take us to the promised land. And for them, you know, opening games where the whole stadium was black and white. The first game against Coventry, we won 3-0. It could have been about 8 or 9. It was just electric, and the momentum, the excitement.
Off on a major run here, Ferdinand. He's round the keeper, Ferdinand. What a tremendous goal for Les Ferdinand.
But the togetherness that we had, George, you know, when we come in, it could have been easy for the other group of players to like, well, we've done this. Why are you? But they wasn't, you know, Lee Clark, Steve Watson, you know, Stevie Howie, Robbie Elliott, you know, people who was there welcoming you in, coming into the club. And you could see, you know, the togetherness that we would go out and have a meal, we'd all be there. Okay, there'd be a few bottles of beer and maybe a glass of wine at the table, but we'd all be there. But I don't want people to go away that we thought we was always, you know, out doing it. But whenever we played golf, even Philip Albert, I've got a great story. We used to play golf at numerous golf courses around the area. Philip was playing golf for 2 years. He didn't realise he was left-handed. He was using right-handed clubs, but he didn't care because he just wanted to be out with us. He wanted to be on a golf course with us. It wasn't until he remembered that he was actually left-handed. So we would go and play golf and we'd all be there. And he wasn't, you know, and he realised why he wasn't doing well and he was hitting the ball everywhere. He was using the bloody wrong clubs. But we used to do things together. Now, after the game, you know, we used to go out with the girlfriends or wives or someone's birthday. And then, as I said, the granddad collar shirts. 10,000 people waiting for a shirt to come through, and the excitement that we had and that experience. And then the pressure started to mount. You know, we get the defeat at Old Trafford. That was a slap in our face.
Well, Newcastle know all about him.
then we get back in the groove again, and Christmas, and we go into the new year period. And I always go back, you know, to the game at St James's Park when Cantona scored.
Coming in, and he scored for Manchester United.
Yeah, and really deflated us. And we never really got back.
They've been under the cosh for so much of this match. But 6 minutes.
We played so well in the first half, and Schmeichel made save and hitting the post. The atmosphere was electric. You know, in hindsight, is always a great thing. We come in at halftime. Maybe because of the inexperience of all of us, and I'm talking about the coaching staff and everybody at that time, because the Premier League, how it was, the rally cry was, we've showed them once, let's do it again. Let's go and hammer these lot. Let's go and show them. And then that would make the gap even bigger. We didn't. We got sucker punched. It could have been, we ain't losing this game. Whatever happens, we ain't going to lose the game. If we win it 2-0, 3-0, which we deserve, great, but we ain't going to lose it. We lost it. And then it was like sand going through your fingers. We couldn't get it back. But that was, even at the end, and I'm sure you was at the stadium, people that might be listening and even maybe listen to this later, we did a lap of honour. And they were singing our name. Well, not our names personally, but the club's name was singing it. And we felt we failed. We failed because we come short. And they were still there cheering us on. And you can see the Kevin's face. He was, you know, trying to be grateful, but was a little bit embarrassed because we felt like we'd let you down because we got so fast. But that's why George, it was so brilliant. And then we go again with Alan Shearer and we get back in there. Then we do get into FA Cup finals. We do play in the Champions League against Barcelona, and we felt that we was one of the contenders. We was one of the top five or six in the Premier League at the time. And then we all know the story, what happened, how it all, you know, got broke up a little bit. And we did it. But that time of being involved was a magical time. Like the city with the development that was going on, the restaurants, the bars, the apartments, the offices that was going on. It was a great time. Every night you'd go out, there was people walking out, having food, drinking, whatever it was. It was just a social atmosphere. And that's, you know, again, even with the Mackhams and the Smog, in that region was great for everybody. Was great. It was great. We always used to beat Borough and things like that. Some of them would have some really, really good games against them. But it'd be great for all of us. It'd be great for the whole, you know, I'm sure if you ask, as I said, Sunderland and Middlesbrough, you know, that time was a great time for the region and for the area. To have three teams in the Premier League and all doing well was great. And, you know, as I said, the only thing, and there's not a day goes by, that we don't think that we're disappointed we didn't win it. And again, not for us, it's for the fans, for the club, because when you see Blackburn, you see Leicester, and now obviously Liverpool got back in there, it should have Newcastle United in there.
It should. But
we failed.
But no. I do want to tell you one thing. A, you let nobody down, and I'm sure you do know that. And B, do not ever say that you failed, because you provided a city with, those of us who were old enough to remember it, with the happiest memories of our footballing lives. You played a football that nobody has touched since. You can talk as much as you want about Man City and the rest of them. You played astonishing football. You represented us. You were part of us, and we were you. And I'm afraid that if that's failure, then I don't want success, quite frankly, because it was astonishing.
Yeah, I would second that, definitely. It was an incredible time to be a fan as well. I mean, I was a boy. I was only, what would I have been, 13, 14 that season. And the feeling of being proud of your club, of being proud of being a Newcastle fan, it was just absolutely incredible. The excitement that you used to get going to games and knowing that we could beat anybody who came up, and the feeling then was just, I mean, obviously 14-year-old, you've got all kinds of things running through your body, but that was just amazing as a teenager to have Newcastle. And just enjoying the football. And like George says, nobody, I don't think any Newcastle fan would ever have classed that as a failure. And definitely you didn't let anybody down. I mean, get that out of your head, because it's just simply not true, you know?
Yeah.
It's just eternally grateful for it, to be honest, Warren.
Yeah, we set off with Kevin to do it. That was our thing. And it means so much, you know, your kind words that you said. And that's what we set out to do. We set out to make people proud. We set out, obviously, to win, but we set out to have a team that you'd be proud of. And that's what Kevin's always ingrained into us. And that's what Bobby did when he come back, you know, realise who you... And we knew the blue chip players that he said. And that's why he made sure that Craig Bellamy, Kieran Dyer, Laurent Robert, you know, the list goes on and on, that this is what it means. And we was the ones that made sure that, and, you know, we was proud to do that. So, you know, that if we did that, then all right, we did succeed, because that's what our goal was able to go and do. Personally, was obviously the medals, but, you know, as I said, you can't have everything, but it was bloody, it was fun. It was great.
Certainly was.
You said,
it was
great fun. You said as well that people always had your back, but it wasn't always easy for you either, was it? I mean, you had to earn your Spurs at Newcastle. You had to earn your respect. As you say, it wasn't like David Ginola coming in, doing a great trick and immediately kind of becoming a fan's favourite. You really had to work for your relationship with Newcastle fans, didn't you?
Yeah, and that's probably what makes it more so satisfying, is that I had to earn their respect. People make me laugh and they say, oh, was it because you was from London? It's because I weren't playing well. That's basically it. I was having a bloody nightmare. And I had to try and get out of it. And like, I go back to what I said earlier with John Beresford, my only way was to work hard. You know, when we was going well, it was great. And then there was one or two instances that you give the ball away, you get deflection. And the harder I tried, the worse it was getting. But I had to keep going. You know, I got told twice, your job's too small, never going to make it, you know, and played lower league football. And I didn't want to go back there. That's the, you think the Premier League's tough, go and play non-league. Go and play in the lower leagues. That's really tough. And, you know, what I had to do was get going, to work hard, played in different positions and get through that. And I don't think there's any more satisfying than, and it sticks in my mind, we play Crystal Palace at home. We got down to 10 men. It's an FA Cup game. We look like we're going out the FA Cup. And I had a good game. And to all of a sudden realise, and because I'm caught up in the moment, that the whole stadium was singing my name. That's special. You know, that don't happen to everybody. That doesn't have. Of course, it happens to Alan because it was in his contract. You know, I'll have a quick story as well. Alan's probably never. When we used to do a team talk with Bobby, Kevin's different because Kevin would call Alan and love him by your first name or your nicknames. But Bobby would put a team out, so it'd be like Given, Barton. You know, there'd be different names that they would put out. Dabizaz, Lee, Speed, Robert. It would be Alan.
Alan.
Can you not spell Shearer? I was like, you know, is it not why I'm doing it? But it was always Al. But anyway, that was a big part of it all. But it was as I said, wonderful time.
When Warren, you're still, sorry, George, I was going to say, sure. Warren, you're still one of the very few Newcastle players who's had a fan chant written about his hair. And you don't get, there's not many of those.
My sons, obviously, they're older now, but when they say it's like, Dad, why do they sing about your hair, not about maybe crossing the ball or defending the goal or just, as I said, you know, maybe it covered over a lot of things about the hair, but it was a great flock of hair anyway. Bez tried to do it, but
I had the Bez same hair. I had the same hair at that time.
Bez was out of a bottle, but Ginola came along. But yeah, it was flowing locks. It looked good in the lights.
And I mean, Ruud Gullit did get quite a few sort of things wrong at Newcastle, but one thing he got very right was when he said that every team needs a Warren Barton. And you knew exactly what he meant, because you talked about your work rate and your attitude and that kind of constant desire to kind of get better and improve yourself. But he was also talking about your sort of contribution off the pitch, which I sort of in the dressing room, which I guess fans just won't have sort of seen or appreciated at the time.
No. And Rob Lee gave me, he doesn't normally have too many compliments, Rob Lee, but Rob Lee gave me the biggest compliment. When I left to go to Derby, he said, it's a backhanded compliment if you want to with Rob, is that we may not miss him on the field, but we miss him off the field. And I don't want to say it wouldn't have happened, but what happened to Bobby towards the end of that time wouldn't have happened with the younger players if I was involved. I'm not saying they would have listened to me all the time, but I would have tried to have nipped it in the bud. You don't argue with him. You don't disrespect him. You don't do that. If you've got anything to say, say it in the open and that type of thing. And what I tried to do, even the new players that come in, you know, when Noberto come in, made sure that, you know, we had George Courtney there and we had other people in the club, but, you know, to make sure that they felt welcome to be involved and, you know, to let them know where certain areas are, what we're doing, you know, that's the things that I felt was important. And again, I was involved in the PFA. I was PFA chairman for a couple of years, but yeah, you do need that type of person, because we all can't be Alan. We all can't be that. And even, you know, what was great, that's why, you know, Shay Given would always be around. Gary, Rob, that would help what was going on. If there was an appearance that we had to do in the city or go out of town or go to a school, it wouldn't just be Alan. I'd say, come on, Kieran, you got to go. Craig, you got to go. But I'd put him with, you know, with Gary or with Rob or with that, and made sure that it was that they was looked after, and when their girlfriends come to the stadium or wives, that they knew where the players' lounge was. All the things that, yeah, and that's why, you know, I was vice captain. Maybe when Rob was injured or Alan or whoever it was, then I was involved. But I think obviously as well, the players sort of, you know, gravitated to me and respected me in that respect, because I, you know, again, I had their back a little bit.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I suppose you've sort of talked about this at the start a bit, but when you see this current version of Newcastle, it does give you feelings of anger and sort of upset. I mean, partially that is because you've seen the club at the absolute sort of opposite. I mean, you know, you do your media work now, obviously for Fox Sports and stuff like that. How do you feel when you watch this Newcastle play?
You mean on the field or how they...
Well, a bit of both.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I got so frustrated. The Sheffield United game away was the end for me. That you're playing against a team that, you know, at the time I was always trying to find a positive out of a negative. We started off well, good signings at the stand, go down to West Ham and win 2-0. I'm thinking, yeah, we've got Wilson, we've got some Fraser, we've got some good players, Richie I like. We've got a nucleus of being a good team if we're aggressive in the way we play. And, you know, no one can foresee how the pandemic, but everyone's going to go through that, you know, and obviously injuries, but it just started to snowball into negativity, playing at home against teams, letting them have possession of the ball, letting them dictate. And then the Sheffield United game away from home that haven't won a game, they was petrified of the next game, but we went out there and let them get momentum, let them get possession. And even beforehand, and that just shows you, you know, some of the pundits were saying, you know, Steve's doing a great job, but we feel Sheffield United can beat him today. I couldn't understand that version. It was like, well, if you're doing a good job, how are you then going to lose against Sheffield? But they'd seen that they was being loyal to Steve by saying he's doing a good job, because Steve has got a lot of friends, and rightly so. That's how maybe people see it. But I'm asked my opinion, and that's what I gave. And then when I see the Sheffield United game, it just lit me off, because I could feel that we was weak. We was vulnerable, and we ain't vulnerable. Newcastle United, for me, is not a vulnerable team. It's not a vulnerable football club. Regardless of the ownership, regardless of what's going on, who's running the show, when you put that shirt on and you go out as a coach, you set your team out. And you just said it. Whenever we played, and we used to lose games, but we'd go out there and we'd try and beat teams, and we would beat teams. This team was good enough to go and beat Sheffield United, and we didn't. We let that go, and it snowballed into anarchy, into chaos, because then there was changing the system, and then Steve come out and said, we're going to do it my way, and then people are arguing on the field, and then it just erupted into a volcano, because it's one situation that changed it, because that was enough. We'd sat through enough, because we'd won a game here and there, we was mid-table, and even that was pissing me off a little bit, that, oh, we're happy to be mid-table.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be happy to be mid-table. Yeah. You shouldn't. As a coach, I don't go into it. Whatever my brief is from the owner is just to keep us up. My brief is not, when I've managed Newcastle United, if it's West Brom, and no disrespect, Brighton, Fulham, that might be their brief. But if I'm a manager, coach of Newcastle, it's not just to survive. is to challenge Leicester. Look what Brendan Rodgers is doing. I'm not saying he's the finished article by long, but at least when he goes out, they're looking to win a game. They might win it with Vardy breaking away, but when they go forward, they're going to get four or five in the box. We were sitting back with our three offensive players 40 yards from our goal. You know, it's, you know, it was, that's really the reason why the anger is there, because then I looked at the game against Aston Villa when they lost and the players are on the floor. The staff walk in the tunnel. That hit home to me. And then I look at the players and not one of them picked each other up. That was a sign. Now, even with Rude, you know, Rude did, was his own person, his man management skill and the way he was, you know, he would have gone and done his thing. We would have got ourselves together. I remember we had conversation after some game, Southampton away from home. He weren't even there. He was probably in Holland somewhere. We got together and said, we ain't having this. We ain't playing like this. You know, we've got to sort it out. And I'm not saying everybody, but there was enough of us in there. We shut the door at Maiden Castle and we said, we ain't happening. This ain't the right way to play. And we, okay, I'm not saying that we changed it, but we ended up getting to a cup final and we done well. And we got ourselves in a respectable position at that time. And then the rest is obviously history. Bobby come in. But there's just signs that just grind me the wrong way. And it's, again, people make mistakes. As you said, I'd made mistakes, but it's reacting afterwards. And the easy thing for a lot of them was to walk away from it. You can't, not with this football club.
I'm going to try and bring this back around to the start, because I know we've only got very limited time with you. And you can't live in the past and the game's changed and all that kind of stuff. But the thing about your Newcastle and the Newcastle we saw then was that, okay, fine, if they change managers, the idea was that the next fellow will win us something. He'll be the one that does it. And at every single moment, the club were trying. The club was trying to do something and the team was trying to do something. And this version of Newcastle, this version that we've had for 10, 14 years now, is not trying anymore. And that's the bit that hurts. And I think that's the idea, really. That's the big idea behind the pledge, isn't it? That if the club is not going to try on our behalf, that we have to do it. We have to do it for them.
No doubt. Yeah, as I said, we've been quiet for too long, the fans. We've sat down. Now it's about us. It's about us doing something that's going to be positive, be uplifting, and to show people. And as I said way, way before, George, this might be the kick up the backside that this football club needs. It might be, hold on a minute, look what we are playing for. You know, he said it after scoring the winning goal, you know, for the fans. Talk's cheap, we know that, but at least, you know, for us to react as a pledge to get everybody involved all over the world for this club is set a tone, because people wasn't sure how it was going to go, and it's made an impact and people are sitting up taking notice. And that's what we're trying to do. The hardest thing now is to keep it going, to keep it motivated. And that's what we want to try and do. And that's why, as I said, I think the first game there be that frenzy of positivity and that togetherness, and hopefully that can carry it forward.
48,545 quid exactly. Amazing. Now it's incredible, isn't it?
Absolutely amazing.
In this time absolutely as well, amazing. You know, and in a time that's difficult. But at least people can go in the garden now and get their hair cut and have a beer. You'd be freezing your cuds off, but it'd be your hair.
That's it, yeah. That's it. I've got a bit of a mullet going on here at the minute. I'm desperate for a cut. Might go centre parting in tribute.
You should do that, Paul. You should do that, yeah. Warren very cruelly bringing it back round to the weather at the end, but there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Well, Warren, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and it has been genuinely emotional at times as well. Good luck with the Guardian position, working with the Trust. Thanks so much for coming on and giving us your time today. It's been fantastic talking. We've really enjoyed it.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. And any time. And as I said, it comes from the heart. I mean it. And all I ever want is the best for the people in the club.
Thank you. Cheers, Warren.
Fantastic.
Cheers, guys. Thanks,
Warren. See you later.
Batty, good save. Button. It's a good save, but Barton, from close range, finally gives Newcastle what they've been seeking all afternoon and spoils Tottenham's day.
So, well, there you go, George. That was absolutely incredible, that.
Every podcast needs a Warren Barton.
Do you think we can get him subbed permanently for Chris or not?
I feel. Oh God, let's do that. Yeah, let's do that. He can't be a worse writer for God's. Oh no, let's not.
If Chris is a lovely chap.
Ah, he is. I'm sorry, Chris. No, I mean, I feel stirred and I feel moved listening to him.
I have to be honest. I was on the verge a couple of times during that.
I think he was.
I was very emotional. Do you know what? It's fantastic to see somebody speaking with that kind of passion, that kind of emotion, somebody who's not directly linked to the region, to the area, but has played for the club, somebody that we're always told we don't like outsiders and all that sort of bullshit. But then to hear Warren talking like that, it felt fantastic. It genuinely made me feel emotional a couple of times listening to him speak like that. And it's an amazing feeling. It was brilliant. I loved listening to him talk with such passion about the club.
I think
fantastic.
You're absolutely right. I think that is one of the most sort of special things when somebody who isn't necessarily from the area comes here, falls in love with the place, with the club, and it resonates with them because they get it. Because so it feels like so much of our time we're talking about people who don't get it, who just don't use their eyes, who don't, you know, who don't sort of bother asking the question about what's going on or what's been going on. And he just gets it to the core of his being. He obviously, he represents a very special moment at the club, or a very special era at the club. But for him to still be so passionately engaged and involved, obviously with the pledge scheme, is just great. He's a great advocate on behalf of fans, and there aren't enough of those about. No, what a fella.
What a smashing bloke as well, to boot. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It's nice to actually have the chance to talk a little bit about a positive with Newcastle United, obviously beating Burnley 2-1 at the weekend, and Alan Saint-Maximin going on like a man with a point to prove and doing it himself. Fantastic result. Let's not say a decent performance, because it was pretty dog shit, wasn't it, up until about two-thirds of the way through the game. But it's nice to be able to say we've got the 3 points.
Yeah, just a massive relief. I was there, so Chris is off this week. So I had the delights of Burnley, and you know, for that,
it looked
first,
cold, George.
It was freezing. It was beautiful, but it was freezing. All the snow on the hills, and for that first half, that feeling was just so sort of familiar. That sinking feeling, they've done okay against Spurs. They've maybe, you know, set out with a different way of playing, and then it's that sort of old familiar thing of they do the same sort of thing, it's the same system, it's the same team, and they were awful. They were really awful. But with someone like Saint-Maximin there, they have somebody who can make a difference, and him and Wilson coming on changed the complexion.
It just
changed the complexion, and Burnley were terrified. And our producer Ollie made the point that in actual fact, Andy Jones, who came on the podcast last week, our Burnley writer, spoke with unerring predictive powers about Burnley not wanting to be run at by Saint-Maximin. But that's exactly what happened. He terrified them, didn't he? He certainly did. And how nice is it to see a player in the Newcastle team just playing with that freedom and creativity?
There was a fantastic angle of his goal as well, where it was kind of from behind and above, where it's one of the only times I've ever seen a cameraman possibly have to pay to get back into the ground after a goal. The guy just completely missed it. He took a sidestep and the camera was away, wasn't it? Fantastic. Yeah. Send him to the shops for a gazette. Oh, wonderful stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And brilliant. You know, the first thing to say is, it just puts a bit of daylight at the bottom there now, doesn't it? With Fulham, losing another game on Friday night, you know, there is now a cushion. More importantly, I think, you know, Brighton, we don't know how they've got on, but, you know, Burnley are back in it now. So there's other teams back in it. It's not just that straight shootout between Newcastle and Fulham. And they've given them, you know, they gave themselves a platform and they didn't fall off it. You know, that is the nice thing. That's the nice thing about it. And it just quietens everything down. It doesn't sort of answer all the questions, all the existential angsty questions we have about the team and the club and the management and the ownership. But it's a win and they haven't been enough.
Well, it gives Newcastle fans a nice weekend and also a good feeling going into the week when the pubs reopen as well. It'd be nice to celebrate with a couple of pints and enjoy having a week where we're not constantly looking over our shoulders at what's coming up behind us. So this week, it's nice to say that we've managed to get that 3 points and put a little bit of breathing space between us and Fulham. Who knows, though? We've got difficult games coming up in the next few weeks. We now have a run where we're playing a lot of top-half teams and, you know, we can't take our eye off the ball, George. We've got to be very careful in this next few weeks. And if Fulham start picking up points, it could all suddenly go tits up, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it would be very Newcastle if that happened. But I think the thing is that certainly after that first half performance at Burnley, you felt that, you know, they weren't going to get enough there. They weren't going to get a win there. And then they'll be facing that that sort of run in, which does look very, very tough. Having given themselves a bit of a gap, there is at least some freedom there. They should have the freedom to take these games on now, I would like to think, with a bit of positivity. And hopefully Steve Bruce can find a way of kind of integrating St. Maximin into the team in a way that allows him to be effective, because we've seen what he can do. It's about encouraging him to do that week in, week out.
So one last thing before we do go, George, do you want to tell people about how they can get involved in the 1892 pledge?
Yes, I think it's probably important that people are fully informed if they don't know about the pledge scheme yet. So the best way of doing that is probably going via the Newcastle United Supporters Trust website. First off, have a look there, look at the work of the trust and look at what they're trying to do. And from there, you can go to the pledge scheme. So if you go to www.nufctrust.co.uk, that is www.nufctrust.co.uk, they will answer your questions.
Fantastic. Well, let's wrap it up there, George. It's been fun. Thanks very much. And we shall be back very soon with another episode of Pod on the Tyne. Thanks again to Warren Barton for joining us. An absolutely fantastic, emotional and entertaining chat with him. And keep yourself on theathletic.com. Look out for the new pieces coming from George and Chris over the next few days. We'll be back speaking to you very soon. It's been great fun. Thanks a lot for listening. See you later.
The Athletic.